So this is the Living Legacy Project at the Birchfield Penny Art Center, and it is December 18th, 2015. It is a beautiful, sunny, snowless day outside, and we are all very pleased about this. And I'm here with Temi Kuczynski at the Birchfield Penny. So Temi, thank you so much for coming in today,
for taking the time
to do this. So Temi, would you describe yourself as an artist?
I am. I really, as a craft artist. I've been making jewelry for over 40 years, and I am self-taught, and I was inspired early on, and luckily I found my passion. I was in Denver as a 19-year-old, and it was during the time when there were, I wouldn't say it was hippie movement, because I really wasn't a hippie, but I was traveling and, and doing that kind of thing, and it seemed like in Denver everybody was making pottery, doing something like that, and I, there was a little shop nearby, and they sold tools for jewelry making, and I just decided that's what I wanted to do, and I picked up a tool whenever I could afford it, and started bending wire, and just started very slowly on my own.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And then here you are now, 40 years later.
40 years. Luckily, for the whole 40 years, I've been able to sell my work from the very first piece I ever made. And I make jewelry really to be wearable, sellable, and affordable.
I think that's a big thing, especially as someone who is definitely just like having emerged from grad school and finally having income that I can spend how I choose, you know,
being
in my first like real professional position. It's always been that sort of challenge of, oh God, this piece is so beautiful, but that is way out of my price range, you know? And then there's that other time where you find that gem where you see the artist's hand in the creation of the piece, you know, you see what they've put into it, but it's also something that you know you can take home and treasure. That is like such an exciting moment when you find those pieces.
Luckily I have a lot of customers and followers that have bought my work, especially in Western New York.
So how long have you lived in Western New York?
I have lived here for about 38 years. I grew up in Elmira, New York, a small town, and I had an architect father who, well, I grew up in a family of making things in art and music, and so it was something that was ingrained in me.
When you were starting to explore making jewelry, did you see that as your life goal at that point? Was like, okay, I'm an artist and I'm making jewelry, or was it like, this is fun, you know? And was it organic, or was it like, yes, it, this moment?
It was, yes, this moment. It was organic. It was the minute I started playing with my hands and finding these, I had, it was so long ago, and I started with African trade beads. I became friends with all the Africans and took them around and just started making funny little things with these beads, and I was obsessed from day one. And then I moved from Denver to Buffalo, and I very quickly met my husband, and he was into gems and minerals. He'd been collecting them from the time he was a young kid and had a an apartment full of them. So he took me to a gem and mineral show, and I saw a stone, and I said, oh my God, I have got to set this. And I didn't know how to do any, you know, soldering or metalsmith. I just ordered the tools that I needed, you know, just the acetylene torch, simple metalsmith tools, and I started and have not stopped since. I make jewelry practically every day, and I love it.
That's so cool.
It's the right scale for me.
I
feel connected to the metal, the process of making jewelry, and it's just a way of life.
That's phenomenal. I think what's really exciting too about what I'm hearing about your narrative is that a lot of artists I interview who identify more as painters or sculptors or stuff like that, right? When I start to talk to them about where did you go to school, you know, and I like that that's an intentionally vague question, because I both want to hear their thoughts on higher education for the arts, right? If they see that it was valuable to them, or if some of them feel that it wasn't, and it was like a funnel they were pushed into that actually didn't enrich their practice and saddled them with a lot of debt. And I think that it's really nice to see the artists like yourself who sort of break down that narrative that you have to have a degree in this thing to excel at it.
Right.
And instead, what I really find that artists need, that I've learned through these interviews, is curiosity and
that's what it is.
Inspiration.
That's sort of what being self-taught is. You have to be curious enough. You have to do research. You have to just do, and you have to be fearless.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say, oh, I'm afraid to buy this piece of silver, I'm going to ruin it. I was fearless. I didn't care what stone I broke, and I broke many of them. I didn't care what silver I destroyed. I used silver. I didn't care if it was more expensive. I didn't do it in copper first and then silver. Mm-hmm. I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have the money to do it either. So I saved my pennies to do it.
Mm-hmm. But do you have any words about like how to navigate both being fearless and pragmatic? I know that's a weird, broad question.
I know. I don't know, because I was just fearless.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care. It was easier for me to not have somebody looking over my shoulder
mm-hmm.
and telling me what to make. I had trouble in school with
mm-hmm.
that from day one. I had bad teachers and bad... It's not that I didn't... I went to Fashion Institute of Technology for school, and I just think that with me, I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
I just did it and didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't worry about it. I guess, in my simple mind, I didn't think about anything but making it,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and that's
mm-hmm.
what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that going to school is wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and probably if I would have, now FIT, the school that I went to, has jewelry courses, if I would have known, but I didn't know back then what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I've taken a couple of, you know, workshops. I'm still not comfortable in a school situation. It scares me, and it hampers me, and I would rather read a book, which I did do. I did read every jewelry making manual on how to make things. Now there's videos, but they didn't have them back then. And, I think it's wonderful to go to school, and I've seen people, jewelers who have gone to school, and their work, you know, is incredible and
mm-hmm.
beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in my next life I will, or maybe when I stop selling so much, maybe if I have time, maybe I will. You know?
Well, I think it might also be like the relationship with both the concept of the expert and also also critique, you know? Like, it sounds like you really kind of know how you want to explore and what you're going to try out, and maybe, mm-hmm. like, feeling the other eyes on you,
yes.
or the critique of your own work maybe is not helpful for you.
It's not helpful for me, and it really hampers me.
Yeah.
And even early on, almost immediately, I got into some of the best shows, you know, the Baltimore Winter Market, the American Craft shows, and I got into galleries with very simple pieces. I don't know how I did, but I did really early on. I mean, maybe 3 years after I started setting stones, or 2 years after. I didn't care. I didn't realize. I just said, I'm gonna apply to this school or this show and see if I get in. Well, I got in, and I was nervous even in that situation, because there were such incredible people who had gone to school for years and years, and then I got into these galleries, and it was just too much for me. I knew that if I continued with the galleries, as many as I was trying to fill my orders, I would have been in trouble and would have been burned out by now. So with this jewelry, I took it at my own speed, and I did only what I could do, and I could really tell when it was too much, even though I've made jewelry almost every day of my life for 40 years.
Yeah. That's an important thing to know. It's, you know, to know yourself.
Because people get burned out very easily.
Yep. And also, yeah, it's a very interesting relationship that I come back to a lot when I interview artists, is the relationship with both commercial art and capitalism in general.
Right.
You know,
yes.
It doesn't matter if you are a fine artist making art for art's sake, or if you're making a product that you're aware that people are going to be buying and you want them to.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has to deal with capitalism.
Right.
And I think that can be tense depending on
It wasn't tense for me, because one of my main objections was being able to buy my materials so I could always make jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care, you know, I did care, but I knew that I had to sell this stuff. And I think what I did was, I was lucky and I made pieces that were desirable and that were well designed and pieces that I could be proud of and sell at the same time. And now when I make my more extravagant art pieces, they sell too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Which is very much, just building up your reputation over time. And also, certainly when you're more established, you have a degree of security that perhaps you didn't have. And also, like, name recognition that you didn't have early on. Now, what did some of your early pieces look like? You know, how would you describe them?
My early pieces, I really used stones and semi-precious stones. No precious stones, but they were extraordinary. My husband cut a lot of them for me, and I think that's why we got into these shows. People do stone jewelry, but it was boring back then. Just a set stone and no design. And for some reason, I always had a sense of design around these stones. And I think I could make a piece interesting instead of just a stone, you know, and that's what I did. Used stones and pearls, and they were really shiny. I spent hours polishing them and shining them, and now they're not. They're dark as I can. I'm allowed to make them. They're more primitive looking, and I use patinas and finishes that are much more pleasing to me. When I make a really shiny polished piece, I'm not happy with it now. So it has changed.
Totally. I think all artists progress and go different routes over time. And I think it's also hard for living artists, especially those who are known for one thing, to then be like, okay, but I'm bored with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to do this other thing. And I know that my following, whatever, may not be excited about that, but I'm not excited about that thing.
It took some time for people to realize it, but it's selling just as well as the other, and people are drawn to it, and now they want it.
And you're having fun.
I'm feeling fulfilled. Yeah. I'm not going to make things that I don't like myself.
And I think an interesting, as somebody who does not consider herself an artist herself, I don't consider myself an artist, but I am very close with the arts community. I think one of the most beautiful things about artistic production is that you kind of have to get it out there. You know, like you couldn't just have a house full of all these things.
No.
And I wonder, what's your relationship with the process of creation that you go through and then the object?
A piece that I was attached to, but I can't let anyone know. They don't understand, and it's out there, so I want people to have my more artistic pieces, not my, you know, everyday pieces that I sell. So I get a little attached, but then I let it go. I don't have anything. I have maybe three pieces that I've saved for myself out of all the millions of pieces that I've made.
Even looking at the jewelry,
yeah,
you're wearing
I made this
right now.
And I said, you know, I like this bracelet. I think I'm going to keep it for a while, and I like it a lot. And this, I like. It's just.
It's Did you get that one as well?
Yes.
Yeah, I really like that one.
It's just my thing, but I really don't get that attached.
Mm-hmm. And what I like as I look at the two bracelets that Temi is wearing, one has more cut stones and what would you
amber,
call this?
And these are you know, just pieces of silver that I have actually used a process called kambu, which is a Korean process where you burnish gold on silver while it's hot. So you have and then you oxidize it. So you have the look of, you know, there's some gold in there, but it's not solid gold. Mm-hmm. But it's gold and it won't come off.
Mm-hmm. So. But what I like is that one piece that she's wearing is much heavier, right? And it feels, it definitely feels like it has this sort of like weight to it. I mean, it also obviously looks like it has weight to it, but just design weight to it. But at the same time, it's made with this chain link that's actually very flexible. And then you have this other piece that looks very light and is a very different design. It's much more minimal. It has a sort of center, almost pine cone looking metal piece. And then it's so light around it, but actually it's immovable, you know? And so I just even looking at the pieces you're wearing right now, I like seeing how broad your style is.
I do. I have to say, I don't have a particular... I do have a... People know when it's my jewelry, but I know... Another thing I noticed when I did those shows, the American Craft shows, they would pick an artist, choose an artist that would do one... thing, beautiful things, but it was one thing. I don't do that. You know, sometimes it could be a bracelet with stones all around it, and sometimes it could be something a little bit more modern, and like the piece that I have that the Birchfield bought for me, the angled piece, and I just do whatever floats my boat.
That's awesome. And thinking, so we're totally off script here, but that's totally fine.
Okay.
And I'm kind of loving it.
Okay.
I don't interview many people working in jewelry, so this is like a really fun conversation. All right. But when you are making a piece, or before you've started making a piece, what's your creative process like? Do you have an idea of what you want the finished piece to look like, or do you explore techniques and just see what happens with that? I mean, you're so established at this point that I'm sure you know your repertoire, what you're capable of.
With a lot of the pieces I do a centerpiece. This is the center of what I want to do. I'll find something, I'll make something, and then I'll work around it. A lot of times I really don't know what it's going to turn out to be or what it's going to look like. I guess I've been doing it so long that it just, I make it. I'm really, you know, either usually surprised at the end. And it's a big surprise when you do the finishing, because you put the oxidation, you put the whatever, you clean it up, you polish it, you get it ready, and then you oxidize it and it's done and it looks great. This didn't look very good when I did it. You know, it just, is this going to look okay? And then I put it in the oxidation and it turned out totally different than what I thought it would.
Oh my gosh.
I was happy with it. It's fun. I have fun every day. This is a fun medium.
Totally.
Yeah.
Is, yeah.
And it's not even that I wear it or I was a jewelry, you know. My mother really didn't wear jewelry. I don't know where the jewelry... My father did enamel. And I did do some enameling when I was young. I don't know where it came from. I really don't know where the jewelry thing came. I don't wear a lot of it.
Yeah, it's super minimal on you right now.
Right.
Yeah.
I have people that wear five bracelets at a time. But I kind of like to wear one and show it off.
With that poncho, it would look cool to have.
Yeah, I know. I wear pins usually. I don't wear necklaces.
I don't wear many necklaces. I mean, I find the weight on my neck is too much.
I don't know why. It just makes me...
So you may not know where your love of jewelry came from, but as you've been exploring that, who do you, are there any influential people in the arts that you know of or that you draw inspiration from, or outside of the arts? You know, who inspires you?
Well, what inspires me now is traveling. Okay. We have been able, and actually with my online sales are so tremendous, we're taking trips, my husband and I, and we're traveling. We went to Turkey, we went to Greece, we went to Italy. And my sister, who's an art historian, took me to all the cathedrals. And just looking at the door and looking at the metal doors and the things that were in the cathedral. And I've always loved Baroque, and I love going to museums and seeing their collections of jewelry, the Egyptian jewelry. I was always interested in Egyptian jewelry. I love the colors. I love the turquoise, the lapis, the carnelian together. That inspires me. I also get inspired by looking at magazines with with crafts, handmade jewelry. I'll go to a show and look at some better, jewelry if it's a good show. Mm-hmm. And I still read. I buy books. Mm-hmm. There's not one particular artist. I think more museums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is always fun.
Yeah, it's so much fun. We just went to Poland last spring, and we went to this, I can't think of the name of it. It's where the Black Madonna is. It's full of history. It was a cathedral. And next door to the cathedral, there was this huge room, vast, and it was kind of dirty and really scary looking. It looked medieval and not pretty at all. But there were little cases all along the edge, the perimeter, and in each case was a piece of jewelry that they had given as a gift to this Black Madonna. So that was, I was in my glory looking at each piece of jewelry. There were thousands of pieces. That's what inspires me.
Mm-hmm. And especially given, when I go into those rooms, I love looking at the pieces and looking at the details, but as somebody who has no concept mm-hmm. of the processes that go into the creation, with your eye looking at it, being like, oh, did they attach this like this?
Yes.
And did they, and look what they did there, and think about what they would have had to use to get to that heat or something.
Right, and I'm always in awe of this hundreds and hundreds of years ago, this jewelry that is magnificent. It's just like with music, you can't believe that somebody like Beethoven wrote it in the 1700s or 1600s. You just can't believe that mm-hmm. these things came out. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with jewelry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And jewelry in some ways is so much more, I guess it depends on the type of jewelry, as with anything, but it's certainly made to last.
Yeah.
In these ways.
Yeah.
Like a painting is really so much more fragile than anybody wants to acknowledge.
Right, right.
Like a knife, an arm the wrong way.
Yeah.
Decades of smoke around it. So many ways in which they are destroyed.
Or the light, yeah.
But this, in some ways, it's so small that it both can be passed down through generations or also lost in a drawer and found.
Well, I worry sometimes because I've sold so much.
Yeah.
What is going to happen to all... I mean, I have literally sold thousands of pieces of jewelry in 40 years.
Yes.
And all over the place. And now I'm online and I'm selling... I sold a piece today to someone in Japan. I'm selling it all through Canada. What's going to happen to these pieces? Are they going to end up in a garbage heap or in a... But I can't worry about it.
But you can't worry
no.
about it. Do you sign your pieces?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
Cool. That's really
yeah.
good. Because that's at least... I mean, there's no way to bring it back to the source, but there is a way to document your impact and
mm-hmm.
that it's your work. Yeah. And I doubt that your pieces will end up in a garbage heap,
well,
but I can certainly see them as something.
Things go out of style, just
certainly.
Like clothing does. And I really do look at fashion trends,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's really important
mm-hmm.
in designing a piece
mm-hmm.
of jewelry. You don't want to design something, and I see that a lot, that somebody would wear in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
A stone piece that,
mm-hmm.
that you want to, do something that's contemporary and you wear now. And...
It's still true to you.
It's true to me and contemporary and not, I do look at fashion magazines mm-hmm. and fashion trends. Mm-hmm. That's really mm-hmm. important.
Mm-hmm. But I think also the other side of it is like when I think of the things that even going through, let's say, my great-grandmother's closets when she passed away, right? You maybe you put all the costume jewelry aside, uh-huh. but it doesn't matter if you like the good jewelry or not,
right?
You keep it.
Yeah, you keep
know?
It.
And so that's the thing. Just because even maybe your pieces will be out of style someday,
yeah.
First of all, they'll come back in style.
Maybe they
and
will.
Also they're clearly so well made.
And maybe there'll be somebody who likes it and yeah. likes the style.
Yeah, yeah. And someday that's a cool relationship to objects potentially within generations that something bigger or more grandiose can't necessarily have. Like a painting can't necessarily be passed on in these ways.
Right, right, right.
You know? I'm just, this is cool. I'm exploring some of these
things. It is kind of neat. Yeah. And I like looking at jewelry, you know, old jewelry and...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Seeing where it was.
Yes.
And one of my favorite styles of creation is what cloisonné. You know,
cloisonné. Yes. Yeah. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
And they have been doing that for years.
Thousands of years. You know, and
that's sort of Egyptian jewelry too.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It is. And people have been wearing jewelry since the beginning of time. There's been ornaments and.
Yeah.
So I've always that attracted to me too. You know, attracted me to it, just knowing that. Some little person was making it thousands of years ago.
It's an incredible tradition. Yeah. It's very much, very closely tied to maybe what it is to be human,
mm-hmm.
is this drive to ornamentation.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, in some ways, and I think that, like, the way I tend to think about this more is, like, with tattoos, you know, with the body as a canvas,
yes.
in some ways.
Uh-huh.
And as somebody who has some tattoos, you know, I really like thinking about how positively that's viewed today.
Uh-huh.
But certainly long before that was acceptable, the ornamentation of jewelry, it treats the body as a canvas in so many ways.
Jewelry and even makeup and everything else that you might, you know.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So we kind of touched about this. Actually, we've touched on what's nice about these questions is that they often just, we hit on the questions in the nature of the conversation. So like talking about your art, what you create and why you create it, I feel like we've touched on that.
Yeah.
We talked about your influences, your relationship with school, schooling. I would like to ask you about the sort of totality of your body of work. You know, where you've been. We've touched on, like, what inspires you to make some pieces and how diverse they can be. But what sort of things are you making now? For example, can you talk about some of your pieces that have been in the Birchfield's Art and Craft Media shows?
Yes. Well, the first piece was a piece that I named Angles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bunch of triangles, just, you know, I'd forge them and then I'd solder them all together, and I didn't think about what the piece would look like. In fact, I knew that it was hard and maybe it would stab your neck. It was all kinds of triangles all around your neck, hundreds of them. And I think I did this after my mother died, and I think it was just thinking about the twists and turns of life and how you can't really predict what's going to happen. I was very sad. She had dementia, and it was a sad death. And I made this piece. It looks almost like I was angry when I made it. Well, when it was finished, I oxidized it, and it's very dark, and there's all these triangles. And I thought, this is not going to feel good around the neck. But then I tried it on, and it felt wonderful. And it looked really cool. And I love that piece. And at the very end, I put little rough diamonds that I use. Rough diamonds are kind of cloudy, and they're not sparkly. There's some sparkle, but they're not like a diamond where it really sparkles. Mm-hmm. They're rough. They're little squares. And I attached those, and it just made me think of, you know, a foggy eye looking through it, maybe my mother's. So that piece really meant a lot to me. Another piece was a fun piece. My husband and I collected sea glass and glass. We had a little cottage on, you know, in Canada, and he would especially walk the beaches finding glass, and he found these stoppers that used to be in bottles, bottle stoppers, all beautiful colors, you know, sandblasted by the sand. And I always said I wanted to make a piece with them. So I, you know, forged a chain, one of my big chains, and I hung these door stoppers. And then we had some Pinot bottles, and we started sawing them and then sandblasting them. Mm-hmm. So we had little rings of glass, and it looked just like, we called it our faux sea glass, and we would go into people's garbage and pick out the Pinot bottles because they looked the best for some reason. And we, and I made a piece out of that, and they bought that.
So. And then, were you in the last?
I was not in this one, but the one before. And I love my pieces in that one. They were just repetitive, and they had, I don't know, they were just, one had a beautiful mineral specimen.
Yes, I recall that one.
And the other one was just metal that I cut out little squares, and then I attached them with a rivet. And then made a flower out of them and had it at the end of the.
So you work with all sorts of techniques, such as, like, you know, Korean techniques, industrial techniques.
Well, I do, and I would like to even learn more. But anything, I actually do very simple metalsmithing techniques. I use very basic. You know, now a lot of people know the basic but don't know how to work it. So mine are not. I'm not using complicated tools. Yeah, I'm using rolling mills and forging hammers and pliers and just the basic metalsmithing. I love to solder. I could solder all day. I have to say that's my favorite part of making jewelry, sitting there and soldering and then getting the piece together.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't like to solder, but I love it.
It seems like the more I listen to you talk about your practice, a big part of what I think is the, you know, more than just the technically skilled side, it's your sense of design
and I think that's really important, and that I got from my upbringing, my father being an architect, always making things. We didn't have a lot of money, but he would buy one piece that was a beautiful wassily chair or something that nobody had, and we would he would get a sample of these rondel glass, beautiful different color glass. It was a sample for a door, and he would hang it up. So I got my sense of design from him and growing up in that house.
Yeah, totally. That's what really shines through. Because you can learn the skills, but design
It's
innate.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Cool. Are there any other themes looking at the past 40 years of your production? You know, we've talked about early wire bending when you first encountered stones, and also like how you are trying to be aware of the current cultural consciousness
trends,
let's say.
Well, something that's changed me so much is this online selling. And at first I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to deal with it. I barely use the computer. It really has brought me into the, you know, into the century. And you know, I have so many, I have sold so many pieces online now that I'll list five, they're gone in an hour.
That's cool.
So it's a different thing for me. I don't have to worry about ever selling it. I just say to myself, I need to make money to pay this bill. So I make 10 pieces, and then I know within 2 days they're almost gone. And I have met online really wonderful people who love my jewelry, don't know me at all, but buy it, and don't know who I am or what I've made, or that's really thrilling. And I think, I don't know how long this will last, because it's a lot of really producing. And I'm thinking that I have to now take the time to, I didn't apply for the show this year because I didn't have anything. I have to take the time to just explore new things.
Yeah, and I think that's the balance that a lot of artists working in craft that is more, has, is easier to break into commercial venues than, let's say, the fine arts. And I use quotes intentionally because I think that's a false duality. But what, for example, there was an intern who used to be here who was a glass blower, mm-hmm. who I worked very closely with, and he would make, his passion was making these like crazy assemblages of like skulls and glass, mm-hmm. and all this like super unsellable stuff, right. you know, but he was like so excited about it. And so then to pay his bills, he was making a lot of very run-of-the-mill, right. quick, right. make something in 4 hours that he uh-huh. would make hundreds
yeah,
of dollars
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah,
and had to always be balancing that, mm-hmm. you know, and I think in some ways that's actually a strength that is available to art forms that translate within a commercial structure better, where you can have the way to support yourself yeah. making your art.
I mean,
there are weird stuff.
There are people who teach, yeah. and they can make yeah. just their few pieces, mm-hmm. and I decided that this was my occupation, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. so. You know, I view it as that. And now I'm kind of reaping the benefits. I'm taking trips and traveling all over the world with the jewelry money that I'm making.
Yeah. And it sounds like you and your husband are just perfectly paired for
each
other.
We are. He's retired and he's home, but he's got his own little stone selling business, uh-huh. so... It's great. And we travel to get the stones. We go to Tucson every year, and that's fun.
That's so fun.
And when we go to a country, we try to find a gem dealer or uh-huh. something, and we go there, and that's fun.
That's so fun.
So the whole thing is fun. Mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate
yeah.
to have this in my later years
yeah.
because I know so many people that get to be 65 or retire, and they don't have anything to do,
mm-hmm.
and they're unhappy, and I can't play cards and do those kind of things.
And I think, unfortunately, one of the challenges of, like, the way society tells us we're supposed to act
right.
is it's like, well, put in your 30 years, put in your 40
right.
years for this job you don't care about, mm-hmm. and then you get to be retired and have fun. But if you spend 40 years reprogramming your brain to think that's
right.
okay, what do you do for fun anymore?
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, people who... try to find ways to make their creative energies something they can live on.
Or a part of their life.
A part of their life are considered, A, you don't have as many resources available to you. You know, capitalism is not set up to support artists.
Right.
And that's something that I sort of encounter in so many
ways.
With
painters, I know. It's jewelry's a different story.
Yes.
It's like clothing.
Right.
You buy clothing.
Right.
It's so different because I have artist friends, and it's if you're a good jeweler, if you really can sell your work.
Right, you can support yourself.
And I know fantastic artists, and my sister does too, who works in the art
yep.
world, and they don't sell.
Right.
So.
Because, right, and I think that is not a problem with the creative types. I think it's a problem with the value structures of society.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. Yes. So sometimes those are the kind of rants I go on.
Okay.
Or capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about your body of work. We've talked about your creative process in many ways. But one thing that actually just kind of came to mind
right.
is like when you encounter a new technique,
yeah.
you know, that you don't know how to do yet,
mm-hmm.
But it's something maybe you want to learn. What's your process with that?
Okay. Just doing it. Just forging ahead. You know, it may not work.
Mm-hmm.
I was forming these cuffs, doing it in a different way. A couple of them were so bad I had to just scrap the metal. I just have to do it. I try it. I look in a book, usually in a book. Now there's video,
mm-hmm.
so you can really watch somebody who's an expert making it, and
mm-hmm.
I've been doing that. And the trick is to look at to go to shows, see what contemporary jewelers are doing, and, you know, see their, you know, keep up on the new things, because
mm-hmm.
if I'm not in school, like somebody who works at Buff State and has all the tools and has the students, they really know what the tools are to make the jewelry
mm-hmm.
or make things, and So I have to keep up with that
mm-hmm.
somehow.
Yep.
And buy them. Like, splurge and buy a tool that that will help me try something new.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. Have you ever taught any classes?
Not a teacher. Yeah. I've had a few people come, and I've tried to, you know, teach them how to solder or do a few things. It's not for me, and I don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too busy making the jewelry. That's what I have decided to do. I have a lot of people asking me to teach them, and I usually say, you know, no, maybe someday there'll be a time when I have time, but mm-hmm. I really don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I am making the jewelry, and you know, at one point I thought I would have an apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
There was one point in my career that it was either get an apprentice, teach them how to make the jewelry with me, and I just sort of nixed it. I decided to open a store. I had a gallery here, and
what was your gallery?
It was Ashland Gallery, and it was, I had a business partner who would do most of the business part of it, and I made jewelry, and there was American Craft, American and International Crafts. It was great. It was a wonderful store.
Sounds awesome.
Everybody loved it.
Yeah.
It was on Ashland and Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got my Western New York followers.
Mm-hmm.
I made, the first couple of years, it supported the store, my jewelry. And you know, so I could have gone down the route of having an apprentice, being a teacher to somebody and having them help me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just decided to make the jewelry on my own and to do things that I could manage, because at the time of the store, it was either continue doing these shows and getting in galleries and making the jewelry and getting an apprentice, or opening up the store, making the jewelry that I can make for the store, and having my children, which I did during
mm-hmm.
that time.
Mm-hmm. Which in some ways it's beautiful that you were able to set that up.
I things worked out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did plan things. And they worked out just the way I wanted them to. I was able to have my children and be at home making jewelry and selling it like crazy during that time.
Yeah.
Of course, I had to put them in front of the TV with Sesame Street, but, you know.
But that's definitely, that's just fine.
Yeah.
That's just fine. Cool. That's
so funny. I don't know if that answered
your question, though. It's okay. This is just a fun conversation.
Okay. All right.
The next questions are more both, like, esoteric in some ways,
okay.
and then in other ways, that some other questions are more geared towards identifying ways in which artists can speak to their needs in a way that the Birchfield can hear. And we can
uh-huh.
say, okay, these are some of the things that we're hearing from a lot of these artists that
uh-huh.
are not being met in the community. And so that
right.
just kind of helps us understand
okay.
like where are the ways in which we can funnel our resources to try and make that possible.
Right. And I know one thing.
Yeah. So the first question is, like, what do you hope to achieve with your art? That's the more esoteric sort of.
Okay. I just hope that it has happened already, that people just have something that they love and desire and feel beautiful in, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. How does it feel to have succeeded at, or to be succeeding at what you want to achieve?
It feels
practice?
Wonderful, and I really have. I've think I've been really successful,
yeah.
and you know, it's just people coming up to me and saying, I have a piece that I bought 10 years, 20 years ago, and I still love it. I might cringe when I see it, but, you know, people really, I really think that I have succeeded in my plan, and I'm really happy that I have so many followers and now new ones in other countries.
Yeah. That's so cool.
It's amazing to me. I can't believe it.
Awesome. What are some, you know, you've opened a shop, you put yourself out there, you've been fearless, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But what, is there anything else you can share about what you've done personally to advance your career in the arts?
I just didn't quit. If there was a show locally, I would apply to it and make sure that people knew that I was now, because I'm not in shops, I'm not in stores, I do a show once in a while. I did one at Indigo Gallery just recently, just to let people know that I'm around and still making the jewelry. And there is something that I wish there was in Buffalo, and that's galleries. There isn't a great craft gallery here. I wish the Birchfield would put on a you know, besides the craft and media, mm-hmm. maybe a beautiful little show with finer craftspeople, mm-hmm. you know, not, you know, just better items, mm-hmm. well-crafted mm-hmm. items. I know that there's people here.
But are they applying to the shows? Like, that's the thing, too, you know, that there's, and I like the second statement you said about having a finer focus, and I'd actually like to still include that about saying
yes.
it. Like, you know, so.
I don't really think that there's any place to showcase mm-hmm. Some of the beautiful crafts mm-hmm. that you can find in Western mm-hmm. New York. Mm-hmm. There are people that do amazing things, and you would never even know it. And they're going online now because there isn't a place.
There's no market.
Yeah. Right. Even a nice little show that's just... I mean, the craft and media, I think, is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I hope that you always have that. That is so much fun. Mm-hmm. I really loved being in that show. But another one, you know, where...
Maybe more focused on, small, fine work designs.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
In some ways, juried. That's what it has to be, juried. That's what I mean.
Yep.
And by good people. Yep. Not just saying, well, I'm going to come and set up a booth, you know... It's got to have nice displays.
Yep.
I mean, I think that the Rochester Memorial Gallery has one. Mm-hmm. And they invite people from all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I know this is a Western New York gallery, mm-hmm. so you wouldn't do that. But
right. But even finding ways that we can, like, draw from the community we have here,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
That would be phenomenal. Well, good. Thank you for, truly, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah. And certainly what I do like is that, you know, in some ways, and this isn't true all over the country, but it's definitely true of upstate New York, Western New York especially, you know, when Sylvia Rosen first moved here in, I think, the early 80s, coming from a craft art background that in, I think, Ohio or somewhere like that, where craft art was treated just the same way as any other fine arts, right?
Right.
And then she comes here and is relegated to, like, a second-class art.
And you're so right, because years ago I did a little show in Cleveland mm-hmm. when I was doing galleries. And I was in this gallery, and the newspaper came and interviewed me. I mean, there is nothing. They're not interviewing people here. They're not writing articles about artists and crafts. And very few,
right.
very few. It's just not regarded as... important.
The same, right, exactly. And so I think that's something that I'm very proud of the Birchfield for, having worked with Sylvia for so long to establish the art and craft media exhibitions. You know, and that's very much her impetus, and she was the one who helped provide the support to make that possible. And it has, I think, changed the way craft media is viewed here in Western New York.
It really has.
Though there's still definitely farther to go
yes.
with it, you know. But I do like that... In some ways, when I think about what is the Birchfield Penny? What is this place?
Uh-huh.
Are we an institution, or in some ways, are we a counter-institution? You know, are we actually providing space for these interpretations and narratives that we're not seeing anywhere else?
Yes.
You know, and I think that's one of our strengths, and I think that's something we can always improve upon.
Uh-huh.
But I do love seeing that in our history and seeing.
I like that too.
Yeah.
I like that too, and I'm so glad that you. Built, you know, have this building,
yeah.
and it's beautiful.
I know, and we're able to engage on a higher level
uh-huh.
than we were before. And I think it's a little silly, but I also think it's true that we're regarded differently within the community now that we're in this building.
Uh-huh. And it may take a while, like it always does in Buffalo,
right.
and hopefully with this new surge of whatever,
right.
the arts will be considered more important than they are.
Yeah. And certainly when this building was built, this was the first new museum building to be built in 100 years.
Uh-huh.
And now here we are seeing the Architecture Museum happening over at the Richmond Center, the Richardson Olmsted
uh-huh.
Complex, and, you know, the Museum of Play happening downtown, and all these different things. And it's really exciting to see how the situations are changing. I certainly would like to see it happen. I'd love to see... more ways for museum support on the east side and the west side,
yeah.
in ways that are not happening yet, you
no,
know.
I think there's a lot of potential.
Right, right. And there's also a lot of just, like, making sure that when we're surging upward that everybody's included in that tide,
right.
and not just certain more affluent demographics,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Yeah, what sort of craft art is being made by our refugee communities?
Right, right.
And stuff like that. And like,
it's got to be
right.
interesting things.
So I'm very excited to see where that goes.
I remember when my children were little, I did take my son for an art course at a Molly Olga studio
mm-hmm.
on the east side. That was wonderful.
Yeah, that was probably Locust Street Art Gallery?
Yeah, I don't know if it was called that, probably.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're still going strong, and actually we're trying to build stronger relationships
uh-huh.
with them. But they're doing phenomenal work over there. Yeah. Cool. I think we've touched on this in a lot of ways, but for where you are now, is there anything else you can say about some of your needs as an artist that the larger community can provide? And I actually do think we just...
Yeah, I really think it's a juried show.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to have a gallery,
mm-hmm.
a really nice gallery. I mean, you do have a store,
right?
But, you know...
Right. It's limited.
Yeah, it's limited. I think you need to... I don't know. The only thing that I can think of is maybe having more shows
mm-hmm.
or having group shows or, doing that.
Yep.
Like a few artists together or four or five of them and doing a group show or I would like to do something like that. And I would do something. And I've really stopped a lot of things. But I would do a group show. I would do something at the gallery that was besides the arts and crafts
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
media.
Right, because that really is like the one show that is open to people working. And I mean, we did an Overabundance of Detail a few years ago, which was a show that was, it was sort of sculptural. It was kind of outside the box, but it was really more about very detailed artists like Katie Sayre.
Uh-huh.
Right? Katie Sayre's work
was
in it. But having something
I love
like
that idea.
That would be focused just on jewelry.
Yeah. Jewelry or... it could even be a mixture of things.
Right.
I think you would have people come.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Is there anything else you'd like to say about what would help you advance your artistic career? I mean, quite honestly, you sound good to me.
I am really good.
Yeah.
I am almost too good. I found the online selling. it was a surprise to me and a shock. And... I think beside that, it would be nice to have something in Buffalo that was a
mm-hmm.
reputable show
mm-hmm.
or a place, a once a year thing that I could do that was juried. And but as far as I'm selling just about as much as I can sell, I don't want to do that much more, you know, just have time to make my more artistic pieces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could you ever see yourself as somebody who has been involved in a gallery in town in the past?
Yeah.
Can you see that as part of
your
role?
Well, it's fun in a way, but I don't know how much energy I have. It takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
I would never have one myself. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You'd have to have somebody, but I would... love to help with the buying or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. I've got a good eye, and
mm-hmm.
you know, but as far as me doing that, no.
Yeah. But you do seem like you have the perfect skill sets for it.
You know, I did, you know, I know how to buy merchandise that people like, and I know what looks pretty good, and even, you know, online on Etsy, I can find the best people. I found a potter who's fantastic, and he's at Penland, and, you know, I do have a good eye.
Yeah. That's a good thing to know about
mm-hmm.
yourself. Yep. So this last question I ask, I offer one of two ways to everyone, because the last question is, what advice do you have for emerging artists within your field? For some people that I've interviewed, that question is too broad and vague because you don't know the person that
uh-huh.
you're talking
right.
to and stuff like that. And so some people are like, I can't answer that, you know? And so I'm like, okay, well, I really like the question,
mm-hmm.
but how can I rephrase that?
Right.
And so the other way I offer it is, what advice would you give yourself
okay.
when you were emerging?
Well, I can give anybody this advice. just do it.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, it sounds really corny, but the more you do it, the more creative. I mean, if there's even, if I'm stumped, all I have to do is just say I'm making these pieces, and every ideas come as you're making it. That's what you have to do. You can't sit there and say, oh, I think I want to make jewelry. I think I might buy a torch. If you really want to do it, just do it. If it doesn't work, sell your torch, sell your whatever. Everything can be sold. Metal can be scrapped. Stones, it just doesn't matter. Don't buy diamonds. Yeah. Don't get into diamonds and precious stones. That's my advice. And just do it.
That's beautiful advice. I like it.
It's the only way I did it. You can't just think about doing something. And you can't do two pieces and say you're a jeweler. And you can't do junky jewelry and say you're a jeweler. You have to hone in on your craft and work at it.
Mm. Timmy, is there anything else you'd like to share before we conclude this interview?
I don't think so.
Well, this has been an awesome interview.
It has?
Yeah.
Because I was really nervous about this.
No, I've been really enjoying this. I don't think I've interviewed many, many people working in jewelry craft.
Uh-huh.
And I've loved our conversation today.
Great.
And I've really
good.
Been very interested in your perspective and your trajectory. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I did it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Right.